By recording, the radio divisions of UNESCO and the United Nations present Sir Laurence Olivier in Letter from Father.
If you prick us, do we not bleed? If you tickle us, do we not laugh? If you poison us, do we not die?
Recognizing that the inherent dignity and the equal rights of all members of the human family are the foundations of freedom, justice, and peace, the General Assembly of the United Nations, on December 10, 1948, proclaimed the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. To mark this anniversary, United Nations Radio and UNESCO bring you Sir Laurence Olivier in Letter from Father.
It is 1 o'clock. 1 o'clock in the morning, December the 10th. An hour ago, I sat beside your mother. She said, "You look so tired. Why don't you go home and rest?" Then she was rigid with pain again. She gripped my hand. Her nails cut into my palm. The moment passed, and her voice was soft. "It will be easier if you're not here. The doctor will call you." Now, it is 1 o'clock on the morning of what will be your birthday. And I'm writing to you, even though I cannot yet put a greeting on my letter. I cannot yet start with, "My dear son," or "My dear daughter." I must wait. And it will be many years, too, before you read my letter. Perhaps by then there will be no cause to read it. I shall be happy if that should be. But for now, I cannot let my thoughts be dulled by hope. I am writing in the stillness of our home. Around me are all the things we know so well, the things you will grow to know. The comfortable and the uncomfortable chairs. The clock, which always gains 6 minutes a week. The resolutions about tidiness and the failures to keep them. And the garden, where I struggle with vegetables, and your mother succeeds with flowers. This will be your home. In it, you will find love. Always I shall strive for your security and freedom for you to grow in mind and body. For the world beyond your home, I can give no promise. This will be your birthday. But it is not yours alone. As life begins for you, so does it for many thousands of others in many lands, with skins of darkest black to fairest white. With features cast in many forms, with creeds, customs, talents, and tongues varied beyond any single understanding. None of those with whom you share this birthday will be quite like you. Save in one thing. You are all human beings. You are all endowed with reason and with conscience. You are all born equally worthy of life and with a right to live it fully in dignity and freedom according to your ability. These are simple words. So simple that men often neglect their meaning. It is so easy to turn away, to call them sentimental, to dismiss them as pious ideals, hollow as an echo. It is so easy to take refuge in indifference, so comfortable to cover callousness with talk of realism. That there are those who turn away, who tolerate the denial of human dignity, is to the shame of all. There is no need here to recall the excesses of man's inhumanity. No need to speak of monstrous tortures turning men into fragile shadows. No need to speak of millions herded to death behind barbed wire, their withered bodies tipped like refuse into pits. These are horrors that have always brought retribution upon those who inflict them. No. I would rather speak of less appalling things, of the insidious worms of inhumanity which feed upon us in silence and obscurity, slowly destroying our claim to civilization as surely as termites will destroy a pillar of wood. I visited an island in the Pacific once. In the street of the small town one day, I was walking behind a man in a white tropic suit, cleaned and pressed. Just as he passed a shop, someone ran from his doorway and collided with him. He staggered a pace or two, he recovered his balance, then shouted, "What do you think you're doing?" The other did not answer. He stood there, motionless, his eyes cast down fearfully. Passers-by stopped to stare at him, an islander, wearing no more than a strip of colored cloth about his hips and a string of small shells about his neck. "Answer me," came the demand. The islander then mumbled an apology, but it was not accepted. The man in the tropic suit grabbed him by the shoulder, ripped the string from his neck, and pushed him to the ground. Slowly, the islander gathered the broken, scattered shells. Then he rose, and without a word or a glance, moved away into the crowd. The fine white dust of the road clung in smears to his dark skin. No blood flowed there. No punishable crime was committed. Yet who suffered the greater degradation? The islander, humiliated before his fellows? Or the one who allowed the worm of prejudice to bore deeper still into his heart and mind? At another time, in a great European city, I saw a little girl. Her cheeks were colorless. Her thin, frail body was covered with only a faded cotton dress. Old open sandals were fastened to her dirty little feet with string. I saw her alone in a busy street, leaning against the entrance window of a restaurant, with one foot on the pavement and the other on the doorstep. Through the door came the odors of fine cooking. In the window, inches from her head, were baskets filled with fruit, heavy bunches of grapes, pears with gleaming light yellow skins, rich red apples, oranges. Yet there was more than the sheet of glass between the child and that display, and more than a doorway between her and the shining silverware, the starched linen and the food inside. Somehow she seemed to know this, though it is impossible to tell her thoughts. Her expression indicated nothing. There was neither joy nor sorrow, hope nor despair on that old young face. Even when a waiter in an immaculate apron came through the door and ordered her away, there was no change, no sign that she wanted to stay, no sign that she knew where next to go. As I watched her merge with the crowd in the street, she looked smaller than any child I've ever seen. She could not have been more alone had she walked in the isolation of some wide, wild desert. No blood flowed there. No punishable crime was committed. Yet everyone in that street, that city, that land, everyone in this world was guilty. The worm of indifference was in us all. Indifference to that little girl's claim to life as a human being. Indifference to her right to a home, health, and protection. I hesitate to continue. Is it possible to encompass in words the whole of our inhumanity? Should I speak, too, of those denied the right to work, or the just rewards of work? Of those condemned to ignorance and its bitter fruit because there are none to teach them? Of those who cannot even call a land their own? To think on these things alone is to be seized by fury or dismay. Happily, however, they are not the whole picture. And you would be right to accuse me of distortion if I were to suggest that they were. The picture also contains the promise of a future. The promise that enables me to hope that one day my words may seem to you remote and strange. Noble minds in many ages have held this promise before us. And despite all, it is our own age which gives the greatest hope of its fulfillment. Men's minds today are changing. For the first time, we are beginning to think of the lives not simply of our own family or nation or race, But of all people everywhere, whether they be black, yellow, or white, or whether their homes are towers of steel and glass or huts of bark and straw, the distinctions that have divided men for so long are crumbling. They must continue to crumble till the last remaining fragments are ground to dust by the concerted will of all. On this very day, in 1948, this new promise found its finest expression in a declaration by the assembled representatives of more than 50 nations. Born of the destruction of war and the agony of millions, it is yet a declaration that denies that blood and tyranny must forever remain the spur. Too often has our progress awaited the stimulus of battle. Too often has the imminence of death been the motivation of life. Now, at last, we have an affirmation of faith in life itself. Still, it remains a promise. Between the promise and the fulfillment lies the struggle. Are you wondering why I say all this and what it is I expect of you? I expect nothing. I hope you will grow to be a wise and civilized person, free of all hate, meanness, and prejudice. But I shall not impose my hope upon you. If you wish it, I shall gladly share what knowledge and experience I have with you. But the decisions and the responsibilities will always be yours. Nevertheless, I cannot finish without one word of warning. Between the promise and the fulfillment lies the struggle. We have the ways and the means to win that struggle. What we too often lack is the will. Too often, we are afraid. Fear is the fertile soil which nurtures the bigot and the demagogue. To tolerate their growth, to withhold your defiance, is to assure their final domination. Hello. Yes, speaking. Is that you, Doctor? Yes? Yeah? Thank you, Doctor. Thank you. Thank you very much. Good night. You are with us now. Your life has started. In the morning, I shall see you for the first time. And for the first time, too, at this moment, I know to whom I have been writing. I can add the greeting I have been waiting for, and I can put down my pen with welcome and good night to you, my son.
You have just heard Sir Laurence Olivier in Letter from Father, presented by UNESCO and United Nations Radio to mark the day the Universal Declaration of Human Rights was proclaimed, December 10th, 1948. We wish to thank the BBC for recording Sir Laurence in Glasgow, Scotland. Letter from Father was written by Ken Pittendry and produced by Michael Hayward of United Nations Radio.